Welcome to the Commerce Talks podcast. Lina reached out to me because she just saw the Gartner Magic Quadrant and Critical Capabilities Guide and said, hey, I saw you've been named leader and have a couple of questions because I want to understand Gartner a bit better. And then I told her, okay, so let's discuss in a podcast and bring the one and only person who really knows about this stuff, Boris, my co-founder and co-CEO, with me. And with that, handing over to you, Lina. So what are you wondering about?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Commerce Thought podcast. So as Alex mentioned, today is a very unusual episode where actually Alex is a guest. That's to start with. And Lina has a control, you know, of asking questions. So that's the first. And second, we have the one and only Boris on the podcast. So we promise you a great conversation, not just about Spryker, how they became a leaders in Gartner's Magic Quadrant, but also around e-commerce. So guys, welcome to the podcast. And can I maybe ask, first of all, Boris, for you to give a quick intro into who you are and what's your role at Spryker? Because a lot of people know Alex, but this is the first time they might and I met you or hear about you.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me today. And, you know, it's a pleasure to be here. So I'm Boris. I'm the other CEO. So we have a very redundant setup. So together with Alex, we are sharing this duty running Spryker now for almost 10 years responsible for basically everything a CEO is responsible for, but staying very close to the product.
So it's very interesting. And, you know, I hear the Spryker story as a person from Alex. So maybe Boris, starting with you, you know, like tell listeners about how did you guys find Spryker? Tell us more around what Spryker's role in e-commerce space and how in general you are not just having a brilliant product, but also revolutionizing the e-commerce space globally.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we both have, I think, a very extensive background in digital commerce and, you know, maybe coming from different angles. You know, I'm coming more from a technology product angle, you know, built to B2C commerce products. Before that, you know, I had two companies and Alex comes from the, you know, consulting and agency and strategy background. And I think we both have seen very similar patterns, like, you know, 10 years ago that, you know, the B2C segment and especially B2C retail segment and even more importantly, the by now very commoditized categories like, you know, selling fashion online and beauty online and, you know, tickets online, they were actually very well served. There were a bunch of products all the way from SMB to enterprise available. Ironically, for whatever reason, majority coming from Germany. So it seems like we are the digital commerce capital of the world, which is a bit counterintuitive. But what, you know, we started to observe is that, you know, more and more transactional use cases have been built in industries actually outside of B2C retail, right? So today we call it sophistication, or you can also call it complexity, right? And majority of these industries, you know, might be on the B2B side of kind of the house, right? So you know, we like manufacturing a lot, we like automotive a lot, we like CPG, industrial goods a lot. But this was just the beginning, you know, 10 years ago, right? So it was very clear that A, transactional and digital commerce capabilities will extend basically beyond B2C retail. It was very clear that technology is changing, right? So you could see already the very, very first glimpses of people moving away from monolithic applications to something different. We can talk about this in a second. Obviously, cloud native, API, you know, variety of front ends and touch points. This was another observation. We also saw that people were basically asking for what we call business agility today. Right. This was very interesting because back then, digital commerce projects, especially in the enterprise space, were always associated with at least 12 months, if not 24 months of implementation. They were always associated with spending 7-digit amount of money. Right. So it was always complex. It was always painful and was almost always run by the CIO or the IT of the organizations who didn't know better than to buy from the legacy partners they had. Primarily from the European world, buying from the Oracles, from the SAPs, from the IBMs, right? And this made these projects, you know, not perfect, right? Just because the technology was outdated. It was run by the wrong stakeholders in the organization. And obviously it was also run methodologically the wrong way. So we saw this opportunity that hey, you know, we could potentially build a product that would appeal to business buyers, to sales, to marketing, would help them achieve their business goals. We could build it in a modern way from an architecture and technology perspective. We could equip the teams and the partners with the right methodology so that they can apply this project and actually release, you know, projects quickly, that they can go for MVP approaches, that they can get to value faster, and they can do this without breaking the bank. And we can build it in a way that it does not only solve this very linear commerce case where you have a product category page, a product detail page, you put something into cart and check out. We always call it like buying flip-flops online, but even more sophisticated use cases. And this is basically what we did.
Wow. So it sounds interesting. And I always, you know, when people in this part of the world in the GCP ask me why me and Alex, the collaboration on the podcast, on the book, I actually tell a lot of people, Alex is the first person that I met in the 20 years journey who understands e-commerce so well. Okay. And now hearing you, you know, how you guys together as a team apply that knowledge on the product, it's a great, you know. So first of all, let me congratulate to both of you there for being recognized, you know, as a leader in a Gartner's Magic Quadrant. Maybe you can elaborate a bit more.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand. So our focus and our company history, Boris and I are sharing, seeing that products with a very, very narrow product and feature focus are really limited in this kind of digital world, helped us to achieve this position. And it really makes me proud of that, what the team achieved. And making it then in the Leaders Quadrant really is an outstanding achievement.
Maybe just to add a few things to what Alex said. I think the right way of looking at it is, and by the way, you know, of course we are very proud, you know, for the recognition, and there's a lot of work that the team has done to get there. You know, the right way of looking at it, at what Gartner and also the other analysts, you know, publish is basically these are risk mitigation tools, right? It's not like a buying decision tool necessarily. It's a risk mitigation tool, right? So it basically tells you, hey, look at this graph, which is a very simplified view of the entire landscape. It's also not really accounting for example, separating SMB from enterprise, etc. So there are many nuances, and you know, there might be a super, super great player, but it is in, you know, serving customers with up to 5 million GMV, right? And you are on 1 billion GMV per year, so it doesn't tell you anything. However, again, you know, it's a risk mitigation tool, and this is why especially the critical capabilities report, where you can go into the actual use cases and can check for, hey, I'm actually a B2B use case, or I want to run B2B and B2C or B2B and marketplace on one platform. Or they introduced last year for the first time something they call complex business cases, which is actually accounting for complexity, right? Do I have a simple use case? Do I have a complex one? This is what is really helpful for business decision makers or IT decision makers to look at, right? And I think this is the great, and this is what we are really proud of, that for 3 out of these 4 use cases, you know, we are ranked on 1, and for 1, we are ranked on 2.
Boris, and actually just for the listeners who maybe haven't read the report yet, and you mentioned that it's very important to read the critical capabilities guide. Tell us, what are those capabilities that maybe contributed to this such a recognition, you know, from Stryker's sort of side, you know, as you are very involved in building the product itself?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, as I said, right, from the beginning, it was very clear to us that commerce is not binary. It's not like, you know, hey, there is commerce or there is none. It's actually, you can split it into actual use cases, right? So you can have within the B2C vertical, right? You could have variety of use cases, right? You could be selling directly to your customers. You could be having, subscription related use cases, normal commerce related use cases. You could have marketplace related use cases. You could have, and then the same repeats for B2B, the same repeats then there's unified commerce. You could have offline, online capabilities. So if you then break it down and say, hey, what are the, let's say, top 20, top 30 use cases, and not look at it from a pure B2C, B2B way, it was very clear to us and we started to observe that people have more than one use case typically, right? You have the traditional retailers who try to kind of, build direct-to-consumer capabilities. You have manufacturers who try to go directly to consumers. You have people trying you know, bypass the traditional wholesale and distributors. You have more mature players who evolve from a retailer to a marketplace to a platform. So this entire dynamics that you, I think, are very well aware of leads to, hey, I do not provide someone a platform which is just purely a B2C, a B2B platform, but I provide someone the ability or the access to capabilities which help you to run as many very different use cases on one stack, which is also one of the biggest differentiators, especially in the current macro environment where people have less budgets to spend, right? At the moment where people have more demand than ever to launch fast, right? That you do not end up with five different technology stacks just because you have a B2B piece and you want to do some marketplace and you have an offline online business that you need to connect, right? Because this drives up your IT costs. This drives up your agency costs. This drives up your TCO over time. So you want to have a lean, efficient setup and be able to operate use case on one stack. Like you're buying a big box of Lego and there is already pre-composed the Starship, the Star Wars ship, right? And there is like, you know, the car that you can build out of it. But you do not need to go out every single time and kind of rebuy it and rebuild it. It's already there, right? It's part of your value proposition. And you can just leverage the pre-composed use cases that are already part of the stack.
The bar is like actually digging deeper and also very clear, you know, in terms of that you guys that try, it's not necessarily targeting just B2C or just B2B. You're really like approaching it from the business sense. And maybe one day, today, we need to be pushing our B2C offerings because we need the competition. Maybe another day we decided, you know, to partner in another country with a like big distributor and B2B became the critical element of it. So what you're saying, you know, the solution is really capable of tackling a number of use cases from the marketplaces to B2C to B2B across different verticals from manufacturing to grocery, I assume. Let's say, you know, like people that are 1,000 tasks in the day, you know, as a CIO or CTO, you don't really have time sometimes to evaluate every monolithic platform, every composable platform. Can you tell us more about what role, like, what is Spryker? Are you fully composable? Are you non-composable? Like, and how do you, like, is that, like, composability element important if you're trying to really build a modern day, like, architecture as an organization?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, we are definitely fully composable. This was, by the way, also the initial premise also of the product when it was designed, even before the term composable existed, right? So from day one, basically the product was designed in, you know, fully decoupled way. So, you know, the front and back end was separated, the capabilities were separated, the modules were separated. So this was kind of the core architecture that we, and one of the reasons why we thought back then it's important was actually, again, to increase efficiency and productivity, right? Because from a business point of view, people came to us saying, hey, you know, we like what you have, but we have our own PIM or we have our own experience, you know, platform, or we have our own, you know, maybe card capability, right? So can we have everything you have but this or this not, right? So it was important so that, you know, people can put together the, you know, the best of breed kind of technologies. So this was one kind of the more technology aspect. But also from an efficiency point of view, we also learned, and I think everyone can relate to this here, that, you know, the more code you have, you know, the higher your TCO basically, right? So it is, you know, it's very clear that, you know, with every single line of code that is being added, right? You need to maintain it. You know, there are bugs. You need to deploy it. You need to, you know, do QA. You need to do regression testing. So there is actually kind of an inherent incentive, you know, to keep your code base as lean and clean as needed. And there's nothing bad about features to have. The only problem is when you don't need them, but you still have to have them and you invest time into updates, into upgrades, into, you know, bug fixes for stuff that you don't even use. So the main idea was, hey, how can we keep the code base clean, right? How can we make sure that whatever we ship to you is just what you need, right? Knowing that this will lead to a TCO reduction. So fully composable, yes, right? In terms of like decision-making process, I mean, this is definitely, by now it kind of became the standard, right? So I think nowadays, modern kind of decision makers, right? IT decision makers, but also business decision makers, they ask for that. So this is not even kind of I would call it not even like a main differentiator. It's like table stakes, right? I mean, today, if you're not a cloud-based platform, then you don't have real, you know, reason kind of to exist in the market. So this is why everyone one way or another has moved to cloud. And this is a little bit like with composability as well. So nobody likes to buy an old horse, right, anymore. Do people leverage composability, right? Not to the degree that I think we all thought, right? And this is also why Gartner looks at it and, you know, keeps on kind of pushing this maturity of the market kind of out a couple of years, right? Because what they see as well is that composability also comes with downsides. It's not some players try to create the impression that, you know, composability you just need for composability's sake. And this is not true, right? So if you're not able to run your organization, if you cannot leverage composability, this can also bring you basically downsides, can make your projects more expensive. It can lead to, you know, more integration efforts that you would have. It can lead to a more diversified landscape of partners, right? And you don't have the business capabilities to manage, you know, commerce and payment order management yourself. So you need to be very well aware of why you're buying this. Do you buy this because you already have the composability problem? Great, right? Then it makes sense. Or do you buy it because in the future you want to benefit from this architecture because you want to separate your teams, because you want to separate your teams between you and the agency, the SI that you use? Is it because you believe in, you know, kind of agility and that this will give you speed? So you need to make it a conscious decision, right? And I think there are many cases out in the market where people have not made this decision in a conscious way and then have been disappointed and have not gotten, you know, the upside of what they thought they will get. Some even got the downside. So we like being fully composable, but we also like explaining to people, you know, how to apply this in the right way. And we also like to ship a product that is also, we call it pre-composed. So it gives you ready-to-use capabilities so that especially for your first 1-2 use cases, you can be super fast. You can launch in weeks. You can get to value right away. You can go back to your leadership and prove success. You can start making money, right? And then you leverage the composability for your second, third, fourth step as you grow and as you evolve and as you expand.
And I actually have a follow-up question on this. So you mentioned that people are scared, you know, sometimes, you know, and maybe because, you know, they've got disappointed in the past, and maybe because it was the wrong partner, wrong solution, wrong. But what I come across, you know, I've been in e-commerce sort of 20 years. The key challenge I see, you know, when it comes to composability conversation, everyone is clear on e-commerce element of composability, but no one is clear of what will be the PIM, the OMS, the content management system, the CRM, and so on and so forth. So you guys as Stripe, you know, so you said, like, who do you think should take that role in terms of advising the clients? Because physically, you know, like I sit most of the time on the client side and make that decision. I physically don't have time to evaluate e-commerce systems. And then on top of that, every single PIM, every single OMS, you know, my RFP evaluation then becomes 6 months project. Do you know what I mean? So Maybe you can tell us like some, I don't know, whether it's case studies or I guess you are seeing these similar examples. What role do you as a CEO, first of all, play in this? And how do you simplify this whole challenging, let's say, puzzle for the customer?
Yeah, so two answers here, right? One is obviously this is something that great market experts like, you know, you and other partners of ours, like Solution Partners Consultancy, typically do, right? So especially the ones who are trained and experienced, you know, they can help people kind of guide through exactly these questions, right? So this is what they have all these experts for. Second point is, you know, there is no one size fits all. I think this is kind of the main issue. What we try to do as Spryker is we try to apply as much of the data that we have about, you know, what industry is this customer in, right? What market segment, what market size is customer in? What is the digital maturity a customer has, right? What is the ambition level a customer has? What is the ability to execute, right? And many other kind of questions that we track within our customer base, that we collect, right, that we measure. And this helps you to form an advice, right? Because otherwise it's very, very hard, right? So if you have someone who, you know, has a certain maturity level, has the ability to execute, has the teams, has the funding, and has a problem to solve, which you can solve with composability, right? And then you can go and say, okay, you know what? The built-in order management capability we have in our Spryker platform, or the built-in PIM capability we have, is not enough, right? And is justifying a second tool, right, with the integration, because the use case you have is going so deep, and extending, customizing what we ship you out of the box is, you know, doesn't make sense commercially from a timeline perspective, whatever. Then we try to apply it. So what I'm saying is basically pattern recognition, right? That our customer success team does, right? That our consulting and value engineering team that we have for it, they would look at it. They would go back to you as a customer and say, hey, Mr. Customer, right? Other customers from the retail, food and grocery retail space, with your digital maturity, with your resources, with your ambition, blah, 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 right? Have seen success in doing it this way, right? And the answer might also be not binary, like you should buy another tool or you should not. The answer can be, hey, your management demands you to launch this first use case in the first 4 months, okay? The complexity of this use case is not big. You need to prove success. Everything you have is requirement for order management in phase one and phase two will be fully covered by Spryker. There's no need, you know, why you should spend time on RFP, why you should go out. You know, you might come to a point in 12 months from now, 24 months from now, where, you know, you have such dedicated requirements. And by the way, you have also people who will manage the system, and it will not be like, you know, the same two guys that you have today. So you have dedicated team, they have dedicated requirements, and then it's justified. Again, you know, this is why composability is so great. Then you can, you know, plug out the OMS that we have and plug in one of, and we do partner with many of these people, right? We do have great partnerships with people around the PIM space and experience and order management. So fantastic, right? So it can also be a matter of time and timing when to do what, right? And it's not always binary, use it or not use it, but it's very, very important to not fall into the trap of giving generic advice. Right. Because, you know, we have seen people coming to us with use cases that just by definition, if you probe them on, hey, what is it you have promised to your leadership to release? What is the business objective? You know, and then you would ask the same question. Hey, why exactly why do you want to overcomplicate things in the first 24 months? Right. You will not get funding internally if you don't show traction. Right. You need to get the orders. You need to get your merchants on board. This is not a problem to solve, right? For you now. It might be in the future, but it's not a problem to solve now. So, again, I think it's a combination of us trying to apply pattern recognition as good as we can. And then our partner ecosystem coming on top, right? Either with consulting and advice or the technology partners that bring these capabilities to the table.
And, you know, I'm glad, you know, you touched on that, because for me personally, from the other side, you know, that maybe deals with quite a few platforms, I tried to explain to the customers exactly that. I said, listen, anyone can copy the tech. Anyone. Like I after I've seen every single, you know, commerce platform for the past 18 years, I can hire a team and overseas and just copy and make the same product. But one thing that I say, like, I cannot do, you have to work with the partners or technology companies or vendors that actually can tell you this pattern recognition, because what works in manufacturing will not work in automotive and will 100% not work in a picking from store in a grocery store. Okay. So, you know, and I think that's what maybe I'm glad, you know, like you're getting recognized for this, because for me, it's a lot more important that knowledge that you have in the team than actually the thousands of features that you developed in 1 minute. But talking about, yeah.
Yeah. You know, one more important thing, just because I want to avoid that. We talk about it from purely a technical angle, right? So it is and should be primarily kind of a business value, business outcome related conversation, right? I give you a simple example. You know, we have many people who come to us and say, hey, you know, I want to build a marketplace, right? My CEO, my board, you know, they fell in love with this idea. You know, we have competitors doing this. So I need to build a marketplace. And by the way, I even got funding internally. Great. Let's do it. Right. And then, you know, you would ask them and probe them. Okay. What is the business outcome that you expect? Yeah. I need to, you know, I have now 6 months. I need to launch a POC. I have a pilot, and then I need to show, you know, I promise them I will have like whatever, 50 million revenue. And when you try to connect these dots, you might come to the conclusion or to the advice that the business case or use case selected is not the right one, right? Because no way, you know, will there be like a marketplace with revenues, right? If this is the metric you need to report, there might be other use cases that will get you there faster, But you will have to solve so many challenges. You will have to find merchants. You will have to onboard these merchants. They will have to get their products on the platform. You need to solve for payment. So there are so many challenges that either the metric is the wrong one to report on. Then you just need to go back and say, hey, after 6 months, I can go back and say how many merchants I have on the platform, how many SKUs I have on the platform, how well I'm doing this and that. Or the use case is selected the wrong way, right? If you need to show revenue after 6 months, let's go back together and look into the Lego brick box and find the use case that helps you to get to the business objective. And again, the composability and architecture, it's all great, but it's just a tool, right? It's not solving your business problem. So you need to be very crystal clear about the business objective you actually solve.
So couldn't agree more. Hey, look, Boris, you and me can talk composability and tech innovation for another 5 hours. But talking about the business and spinning conversations, so me and Alex record a lot of podcasts from this part of the world, other parts of the world, the book and all, so on and so forth. And actually, in most of the conversations, a lot of the leaders, e-commerce leaders, which are not necessarily IT leaders, but e-commerce leaders that, you know, comes from the business, they share a lot of sort of challenges. And sometimes those challenges, as you mentioned, are quite simple. But as the e-com head or e-commerce director, you know, they keep saying, oh, IT said no, someone said no. So Alex, maybe over to you in terms of, tell us more like, how do you think, you know, as a CEO of Spryker, you hear a lot of these business people complaining about number of things and some of those challenges are really, really big problems. How do you inject that knowledge into the Spryker, into building the product? And how do you ensure that actually Spryker stays ahead of the game and kind of presents the solutions before the leaders even ask for the, present you the problem?
Yeah, I think we had this as a podcast a couple of times. So it's like in a good marriage, you have to talk a lot. Before the project, while the project is running, and obviously after the project is obviously also something, Gartner is evaluating. So they are looking at the Gartner Peer Insights, where our customers are invited to give ratings on projects and the platform, on the platform itself. It really depends who is talking. So obviously with some of the bigger corporates, we have in our clientele, the IT still is reporting into a CFO office. So, that kind of shrinks the opportunity from a business perspective. And in other, corporates, the IT is kind of a business center already. And when the IT is a business center, they are usually much better equipped in telling us where the platform should go. And they know exactly what kind of risks they are willing to take. Risk in form of their own product management, their own feature development. And this is something, a company and also our customers needs to learn. That is nothing that you can do out of a sudden, but you need to, you need to have done some projects. You need to know how IT management is done to be able to give us the correct request. Otherwise, it's just like, okay, we need this, we need that, we need another feature. But that's not how we started. But I think that's something we have learned together with our customers. And it's a very different conversations we have with our customers and CIOs now, 10 years after this Spryker Foundation, compared to the conversations Boris and I have been involved in the beginning, like 10 years ago. There it was really tough sometimes to get extra budget, to get out of this feature function comparison. And we are moving our product people very close to the project, so they understand what is working well, what's not working well, where we need to improve the product, where we need to change maybe the product trajectory, because we are sitting in the same boat essentially, and we also need to move very quickly with the product.
So talking about the teams, you know, again, you said they work with clients quite closely. So tell us maybe more, like, so what's next for Spryker? What are you seeing in terms of in the next couple of years? You know, some platforms, let's not name the names, go from B2C now to enter B2B, other platforms in the same, let's say, report, you know, kind of didn't do marketplace and are trying to add marketplace. Others are trying to go from monolithic to start selling composability. So What's the next 5 years looking for Spryker? What are you working on developing? And
maybe I quickly start before handing over to Boris. So what we're definitely seeing is that e-commerce is changing how companies are earning money in e-commerce. You're working still with a lot of companies that are selling products, but obviously more and more companies are earning money by selling excess, additional insurances, for example, or they are adding retail media into their portfolio, or they're adding financial services sold via platform. The whole P&L of e-commerce businesses is changing, and that's what we are seeing and try to develop also on a platform level, so that our customers can become a bit less inventory dependent, I would call it, because the new big leading platforms globally, still B2C platforms, are reducing the inventory risk. And this is something we are seeing on a global level. And if you're reducing your inventory risk, that means that you earn less and less money by selling products because the product margin is shrinking. And there we try to find ways and business models around it. And marketplace is obviously just the start of it. And there's many, many more features and functions and business models our platform needs to be able to serve, where our customers can do more without just selling products. From a global product perspective, I think that's the way where we are going. If Boris is not telling something else now.
No, Boris not telling something else. I think, maybe just adding here, right? So I think on the one hand, as Alex said, the question is how can we equip, our customers better, and what role can we play, right, in that, right, in providing these capabilities, either directly or through, partners that we, give access to the platform. I think this is one direction. And the other one is still, especially because of the current macro environment, is thinking about what further use cases and I keep on repeating myself, right? So you want to run as many use cases. You actually want to run ideally all your transactional use cases on one platform, right? Regardless of whether this is a B2B use case or marketplace or B2C or unified commerce or IoT commerce, it doesn't matter, right? And thinking further ahead and, what else customers want to do, how do they think about digital sales rooms? How do they think about, CPQ? How do they think about subscriptions, right? So stuff like that to be provided in a pre-packaged, pre-composed way, making it easier and faster than ever to just use this use case without or with just very, very limited customization, right, is the second angle, right? So more use cases out of the box, right, more use case coverage. And then the other one is how can we equip, through the smart application of, services, people for this world that Alex mentioned, right? What, be it retail media, be it payment, be it, whatever else. I mean, we haven't touched on that, and probably this would kind of break the time here, right? But AI is an interesting topic, right? So how does this change things, right? I mean, there are great companies already building, for example, AI agents to replace the e-commerce manager, right? So the traditional kind of headcount that you have to run and operate a system, regardless of Spryker or not, right? You have an e-commerce manager, you have people to do inventory management, category management, product, content managers. So there is, if you have a well-working digital business, you might end up with an army of backend people doing this, right? And there are now companies building smart AI agents that automate this, right? And help you to run your team in a more efficient way or do it with lower cost, right? This is another question, right? How can you, not just from a technology point of view, but overall experience, make sure that you bring down the TCO or you help businesses scale better? So I think this is kind of, where we are thinking in terms of product and surrounding ecosystem.
So whenever you launch one of those features, let's do another podcast, because I believe this is where, not just where e-commerce is heading. I think these are the features you're mentioning, what's going to bring some sort of profitability conversation in the e-commerce world, right? And I do, in my sort of line of business, I'm kind of doing with quite a few brands, retailers, distributors, sort of retail media, but I'm just starting it, as you said. I'm at the first grade now. And I think a lot more needs to come from companies like Spryker, where we are first starting with that education element. And I think if you make it easy on, so I have sort of when it started. I have Microsoft, so start learning Excel because you're already buying, you know, like sort of the office, you know, tools. So if you bring that into the platform, I feel like more of the brands, more of the head of e-commerce or like, let's say business leaders will start experimenting because now they are like quite scared. You know, they're like, it's like, if you remember 5 or 10 years ago, it was like marketplace, no way. How, wow, where, how will I connect? I can't, I don't, I have no people. Blah, blah, blah. And now, you know, it's business as usual. So I feel like I'm glad you are talking about it. And I'm super excited to learn more around it when you guys introduce these features into the platform. So we can continue this conversation for the rest of the evening in my place. I don't know, it's a sort of lunchtime where you are, but fortunately due to time, let's kind of like last thing I wanted to ask you, because not often, you know, I have like a tech tech founders, tech CEOs of a super fab growing company on the podcast, and both of you are together. So maybe what can you share with the audience that is building, and like maybe some people are listening here and they are building a SaaS solution. Maybe they're raising funds. Maybe they want to get to this Gartner Magic Quadrant one day. What sort of advice, lessons you learned as a working it together and maybe hiring people, building the product, bringing the businesses? I don't know, Alex, maybe start with you. Like any advice, what lessons you learned in this 10-year journey?
For Boris and me, it's easy. So we are sharing this agency history. So Boris was running an agency which was a bit more focused like on the Magento Hyper side. So the agency I was running was focused on Shopware and a bit more Salesforce. And when you're like working on the agency side, you're always wondering, wouldn't it be so much better on the vendor side? So much easier just to sell the software and then the agency is doing stuff. So for agency people like Boris and me, that's like the... That's the highest mountain we can climb, becoming a vendor. It's our DNA. We are doing it like for 10, 20 years. And I think that is like also answering your question without Spryker. And I'm always telling this, like Boris, and we're discussing this, like, what do we do if we sell Spryker? Or what do we do if we don't have Spryker? Then we would need to invent another Spryker because that's the only thing we can do. It's our industry. It's our network. That's where our friends are working now for 10, 15 years, sometimes on the vendor side, sometimes on the agency side, sometimes on the practitioner side. Essentially, we have to admit we don't have any other qualifications. So we had to end up on the pinnacle on the Gartner side. That's how I would frame it.
Yeah, I would maybe just add to it that, you know, I think it's very important that you have, you know, when you work on the company or you work in the product, that you have conviction, right, in what you do. And it's, you know, we see many founders and many people not having conviction, right, and like almost like pivoting like every couple of weeks just because, you know, they're jumping from one trend to the next trend, and oh, this analyst said this, oh, now Bitcoin is hot, oh, now we should be doing this, now we should be, you know, looking into AI is hot now, right, oh, now it's virtual reality, so I think it's very important you have conviction, right, and conviction can come from you either knowing a space very well, or you're having a lot of passion for a space that you don't know well, right? But you want to build up, you know, expertise. And then you should spend the time and be relaxed. I'm not saying stubborn. And sometimes the market tells you clearly that you don't have product market fit, or, you know, you just, you know, don't have the sales going. And of course, then you need to reconsider. But if I would kind of remember the last 10 years, how often, you know, when we started, you know, as I said, you know, modularity was not a thing. People said, okay, why is the product so modular? Nobody will want it. You know, everyone wants it to be like one big product. You know, then we started doing B2B. Everyone was like, no, commerce is B2C. You know, B2B is too small of a market. You know, so then and every time, you know, we did something, right, people were challenging this. And if we would have reacted and responded to all of that, you know, then we would not be where we are today. And solving for consistency is very, very important, right? And not be hanging around too much on conferences, right? You know, like every week being at 3 conferences is great, right? But you spend the time on product, spend the time on your customers, right? And then the market will tell you whether your conviction was right. And if it was, great, then you grow. If it wasn't, you know, then you change the idea, you adjust, and then you keep moving.
Brilliant advice from both of you. I am sold. I don't know about listeners, but I'm sold. So Alex, if someone on the call is still not sold, you know, hey, they get to, you know, they choose you, they get to hang out with both of you and learn from all this extensive experience that you both bring to the table. But if they're not sold or they're starting to wonder if they should start with Spryker, learn more about Spryker, what should they do? Like, where should they go? Give us a bit of the sales pitch here.
Spryker.com.
Can we download the report? Is the report available?
We can put the download links for the reports in the show notes, so people can definitely download it, especially the critical capabilities guide, where it's more about like how the software is working, what cases might be a bit more interesting. But we will put the reports in the show notes.
All right. So a brilliant conversation as always. Boris, to be continued on all these features that you're introducing. Thank you so much for your time, and great to see you both.